is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one, only, unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast. This week, while we enter the NFL draft week for the 2019 shenanigans next week, and we are not sitting on a pile of $140 million and looking like Huel at the back end of the Breaking Bad series run. But myself, Stuart Court, is, however, as always, joined by the Tyler Lockett to my DJ Fluke, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Hey, Stu. We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
He really is. I mean, if ever the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh came true, I think Russell Wilson is the epitome of that. I mean, I was just getting over the ridiculous contract video. And then he's getting fucking braids put in on Instagram last night.
Yeah, he's getting cornrows, I think, is the...
Sorry, cornrows.
Actual phonetic term. Yeah, he's... I think me and you both reacted to Mike Dugas posting out tweets about his braiding from his wife late on Saturday, as if, like... Well, I said to Mike, please get him to stop, please.
Yeah, someone has to stop the madness. save him from himself.
Yeah, there's just like it's yeah, I mean, look, this is like spitting hairs kind of thing, but his persona is tiresome and dreary and weary at this point, isn't it?
We're gonna have Keeping Up with the Wilsons soon, aren't we?
That's what I said. Like I said to Mike, it's just a case of this feels like we're about four Instagram posts from a announcement of a series on E, running after Total Bellas or Total Divas, whatever it's called. It's just, it just seems that way. I mean, Ciara, for about the first time in a decade, has decided to release music, new music. I mean, fair play to her and all that, but they're just this gearing up, and yeah. I mean, it was the second best announcement of documentary after the fact that Fleetwood have done a documentary profiling Joe Barton's first year in management this year after what's happened last couple of weeks with that individual. But before we get too waylaid in his off-field persona and weird Twitter videos, Russell Wilson finally did sign. He hit the deadline. We'll get into what our thoughts, and I think you've been called out by other podcasts as well, to a certain degree. It is a massive relief that the deal is done, and we haven't got 8 more months, 7 more months to live through mudslinging from both sides, have we?
It's a massive relief. And to be honest, I actually think the team have done amazingly well here, because I didn't expect them to go along with this fake deadline that Wilson had created. And I thought if they were going to go on with the deadline, they were going to get absolutely shafted. But, you know, yeah, that deal they've got, I would say, is about as good as the team could possibly have done. I think, you know, I was fairly fearful of an average per year number starting with a four. If you said to me it was going to be 4 years, $35 million a year, I would have thought that might be a fully guaranteed deal. So for the team to have done what they've done, I think that's pretty good. And I'm almost surprised Wilson's accepted that deal. But, you know, fantastic that he has. And within the remit of, you know, it's trickier to win when your quarterback's being paid a lot of money, at least he's not being paid a crippling amount of money. that we can build on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a 4-year, $140 million deal, which includes a $65 million signing bonus and guarantees topping out at £107 million.
Just to be clear, it's an extension, isn't it? So he's got this year and then that deal.
Yeah, but I think it's new money, I think. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty certain it's new money because his deal now runs. He now won't be a free agent again. He won't be a free agent, but the next time he will be out on the free agency market is when Russell Wilson will be 35 years of age. And by that point, the league will be playing under a in a world where the CBA would have been restructured and reconfigured for even wilder contracts to come in for quarterbacks and premium position players. But also the NFL will probably be by then making the most of lighter and relaxed gambling laws and rules and regulations covering the sport, which will probably increase and boost the already astronomical salary cap even more. So what he could get when he turns 35 could be quite interesting. But at that point, you maybe expect he could be on the Tom Brady, Drew Brees level of maneuvering money every year to help the team attract players, Adam.
Yeah, I think that's hopefully the case. And if that is the case and we end up with Wilson under contract for the first, must be 12 years of his career, I would say that overall it's worked pretty favourably for the team and the player, which is not often a situation that teams find themselves in.
No, it's not. But it is, yeah, I think I agree with you. I think I was quite surprised how, like, both sides could have claims that they won, if that makes sense. Did you see that?
Yeah,
I mean, Russell Wilson's agent tried out into the media that he compromised and stuff. I don't really see how he can compromise when the morning he woke up after that Twitter video, he was $70 million richer.
Well, I think maybe the compromise is that it's not that much more money than any other quarterback has got. And if you think about the discussion on, part of the salary cap or something like that, I thought we were going to get a deal that was almost kind of incomparable to what anyone else has got. But whilst I've not been an enormous fan about the way that Wilson's carried out some of his, things in the public, maybe this deadline was, it was seemed more legitimate than it initially felt. I always viewed it as something that Wilson was using as a leverage, for leverage in order to get the team to bend over and renege to his demands. But perhaps that's not the case. I mean, maybe he really did want to get this deal, and so ultimately, I think we can be delighted with what's happened.
Yeah, some notes on the contract. $70 million guaranteed at signing, as I say. $35 million of the signing bonus deferred to 2020, which is apparently something the Seahawks and Schneider do. I'm guessing it's something to do with tax reasons, I'd imagine, maybe. $80 million of his 2020 salary is fully guaranteed on the fifth day of the 2020 league year, and $19 million becomes fully guaranteed in 2021 on the fifth day of that league year. $6 million base escalator available in 2023, and there's a roster bonus in both 2022 and 2023 of £5 million apiece. As I mentioned, but also probably the most impressive note, and probably the furthest off the beaten path they went with this contract, is the inclusion, which apparently was Russell Wilson's idea because he wants to be in Seattle and nowhere else, despite what Colin Cowherd and had to try out via different means. It's a very baseball thing, but the Russell Wilson contract has a no trade clause in it. His agent is more known as a baseball agent, and it's pretty interesting and pretty cool that Russell Wilson's kind of slip this in probably for very little financial gain. They probably didn't. Oh, no trade clause, $5 million less kind of thing, is it? It's pretty cool to see a player of his ilk, with all the questions we've had the last few months, being bought up by the Cowherds of the world, that he's not going anywhere for the next 5-6 years at least, Adam.
Yeah, who kind of decides that they're not getting traded? Like, what happens if
so both... in baseball? Like, it's usually like bad on players. So when the Mariners were doing their deconstruction of their roster over the winter, Gene Segura had to waive his no trade. But I think the team pay it off in bit. I'm almost certain. If any Mariners fans out there listening can confirm. I'm pretty certain they paid him like $2 million to sign that off, then they could trade him, kind of thing.
So is this to protect Wilson from not being moved, or the team from him not demanding a move?
If Wilson added it, it sounds like it's to protect him, and he's going to see out and get every last penny of this contract, injury withstanding.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that's fine. I guess we'd be delighted with that, because it just takes an enormous topic of discussion off the table for the next 5 years, which is
at least,
yeah, you're not going to be in quarterback purgatory for, you know, a long time, which is ideal. No, really,
you're not going to be the Minnesota Vikings and the 2021 Dallas Cowboys the 2022 or 21 LA Rams with Mr. Goff, Adam.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, Wilson is not always the easiest person to love, and I was having a chat with Rob Staton on social media in the week and was saying that he's obviously an amazing bloke, but the person who leads the brand Russell Wilson is an incredibly difficult bloke to get on side with sometimes. He's just very annoying. But for all of that hindrance and annoyance, you would absolutely take it to have him throwing the ball for you for the next, let's say, for the sake of argument, 8-9 years, and to not have to worry and not have to be doing the, you know, Bengals equivalent of the Pedestrian podcast, wondering what's going to happen with your quarterback situation is very, very satisfying.
It is, yeah. Then let's see what else can be put around the quarterback, which also brings us on to what else is happening in terms of contract for the statue. Before we move on, other things on Russell Wilson. Obviously, the deadline is well talked about. We talked about this the last time we did a podcast about it. We kind of didn't see this happening. But you've kind of been called out by the guys over at Seahawkers pod that you didn't think it was going to happen. Were you surprised to wake up and see it happen earlier in the week, last week?
I really was surprised. I thought there was a lot more cynicism from both sides, and the way that things were being played out in the media, and you had like Tyrann Mathieu coming out and saying he wants to go to New York. Like, there just seemed like too much chatter, and the deadline seemed too forced for there to be a deal in place. Now, as I said, when I was talking to Brandon, it was only a gut feel that I just didn't expect it to go through. I had nothing to base it on apart from, you know, what did logic say to me? But as I say, perhaps the deadline for Wilson was more of a genuine thing, as opposed to, which is what I thought, that it was, okay, well, you're going to now give me $40 million a year, and if you don't do it, and with the deadline passes, I'm going to use it to blame the team. But it was very refreshing to see that, in spite of all of the, you know, tit for tat that was obviously going on, as does with all these big negotiations, they actually sorted out like adults, and we've got a quarterback.
Yeah, I didn't expect this deal to be signed on Monday until our friend, I think he posted, is it Twitter, our friend of the podcast, Michael Sean Dugard, posted a video on one of his social medias with his clip from Seattle TV, and he was asked directly if he thinks the deal was going to be done by the deadline, and his response was absolutely. So as soon as I saw that, I went to bed. I know what I'm going to wake up to in the morning, and I did, which was refreshing. So,
well, it was quite funny that I got in the car and I was going to work in the morning, and I saw the tweet come through that it had happened, and all of the kind of Americans on social media that had been freaking out and like, I'm going to burn my jersey and John Schneider damn to hell, all that stuff, and I was like, you're all in bed for the next 7 hours and you've got no idea what's going on. This is absolutely magic.
And then also we got people like Dave Softy Mara posting probably the best, I mean, people probably seen the DJ Fluka video and Tyler Lockett video. Which one's better for your money?
I think Softy's is very good, actually.
I
have a general view in life that you should always think that what DJ Fluke has done is the best, just in case he ever confronts you about it. So, that's the general way that I take things.
That's a very good way to live your life. But also, I'm surprised one of the questions we got is that I'm hoping you don't record the podcast the same way Russell Wilson goes to sleep. And it kind of debunked everything with his no time to sleep kind of thing, didn't it?
A little bit. I mean, I am kind of lying down half, right, with my head resting on a pillow. I don't think Ciara's lying anywhere. No. So, yeah, it's a slightly different
Only slightly different. And obviously another big, with Russell Wilson dealt with, the next contract situation appears to be coming to somewhat of a head, and appears that it probably will come to a head over draft weekend in Nashville, over Thursday, Friday, Saturday, at the back end of this week. It surrounds Frank Clark. The team put the place the franchise tag the first time in 17 decades that they placed the franchise tag on a player. It appears that Frank Clark has some suitors outside of Seattle, but also outside of the NFC, with the Jets, Kansas City Chiefs, and to a lesser extent, per Tony Pauline on Rob Staten's podcast last week, the Indianapolis Colts. Connor Hughes, who covers the Jets for The Athletic, said that the Jets are interested in Frank Clark, just don't have the ammunition to get it done. Seahawks want the number three pick, and the New York Jets obviously won't give it up. And Connor Hughes believes that the Chiefs are most likely to iron something out. I think we touched on it a little bit with Alistair last time we podcast a couple of weeks ago, but this kind of seems the best for all parties at this point, doesn't it? It kind of, and if they get a deal done, the team have managed to do something they didn't do with Earl Thomas over the last 15, 18 months. They've kind of done it pretty swiftly, if it does go down over draft weekend, with Mr. Clark, Adam.
100%. And, you know, I've seen some people saying, oh, yeah, but, you know, if they can only get a second for him now, then they'll get a third for him next year and a compensation pick. But you're going to sign someone that's going to wipe that compensation pick out in a year and a half's time, because you're going to have a lot of cap space. So I hate that logic. And to be honest, I was saying to you on WhatsApp in the week, I'd probably take a top 40 pick for the guy now, because we've been through this with Sherman and Thomas, with the posturing of, no, he's definitely worth a first round, and how dare you not take a first round? Well, let me tell you that pick number 38 for Sherman or Thomas now would look an awful lot better than what we actually ended up getting for them, which was nothing. So I would be very happy if they were able to do a deal for a high second, or ideally a first pick. I mean, I guess the only way you can think the Jets pick would even be worth it is we'd probably have to give them we'd maybe just swap first round picks.
The only way I see the Jets being the team that they pull a deal off is if the Jets move back from three, which is what I think they're going to do. So if they move back from three to say 7 or 8, they're probably going to get a second or a third. I would literally take the second round pick, and even maybe throw in a 2020 second round or something for, just because then Frank Clark is not going to be paid $19 million, whatever, $21 million, whatever. Lawrence, was it Lawrence?
Yeah,
Lawrence was paid by the Cowboys a few weeks ago. That's just not going to happen. We've got Bobby Wagner to pay. You've got Jaron Reed to a lesser extent to play. You might have to pay Jermaine O'Fedi's fifth year option, which is going to be pretty hefty as well, which obviously we'll get onto in a sec. But yeah, this Frank Clark is not going to get that from Seattle. So if the Seahawks can bolster this year and next year's draft pick pool selection box, whatever the right phrasing is, then Frank Clark is the most valuable asset at this point, even with the whatever the team taking him are going to have to pay him. He is the most valuable asset they're going to get, and he's going to be the easiest one to move and get that. And it just feels like maybe Pete Carroll, Ken Norton, everyone feel they can manufacture. I mean, because let's be honest, we sat here 12 months ago with Cliff Avril retiring, Michael Bennett playing in Philadelphia, Malik McDowell retiring, but just without taking a snap on the practice field. We didn't see what Frank Clark did coming, did we, if we're being honest?
No, and he had an amazing season given what we'd seen from him in his first 2 years. And as we said last week on the pod with Alistair, you know, this is the perfect time to cash in.
Yeah.
If you don't think that he's going to be the fulcrum of your next Super Bowl winning team or Super Bowl challenging team, then you should get rid. And I just think that for me, obviously an elite pass rusher is a great thing to have, but you can find it. Like Dwight Freeney got 4 sacks for us a year ago.
Exactly. That's
literally off the street. And I'd rather pay a cornerback that money than someone in that position, to be honest. I think the skill differential at defensive end, like it's one of the most stacked positions coming out of every draft. And I just feel like it's not the position to pay that much money to if you're also paying a quarterback.
No, and it kind of feels like this coaching staff feel like they can manufacture double-figure sacks from a couple of guys instead of just having that barnstorming end. Because, I mean, really, Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett combined for these kind of numbers, but they didn't really even match the output what we see from Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack. They didn't even match what like the public perception of them, and it kind of just doesn't seem that the perception of Frank Clark matches what he wants and what he is probably going to get and from his next team, because it's not going to be the Seahawks. And at the same time, I have very little time for Frank Clark, so it wouldn't be the harshest of breakups from my perspective anyway to say adios to Frank Clark and get $19 million cloud off the books and just have a few more picks even in the position this year, this next week in the draft, which is the defensive line, defensive end, edge guys is absolutely loaded. Mm-hmm. Like everyone who covers a draft more than the Schefters and Rappaports of the world do. It's just been raving about that pretty much for a year. Rob Staten's been on about it for a year, how deep this class is at that position. So if you can manufacture a way of getting more picks to fill different needs and different depth issues on this team and get out of the $19 million hole you find yourselves in, then why not do it with someone like Frank Clark, eh?
For sure, and I'm probably being biased because I also don't particularly like the bloke, and I think he's done things in his past. Forget the pre-draft stuff. There's stuff to like. There's the tweet to Natalie Wiener, which it's just a horrible, horrible thing to say. There's the issue with Jermaine Ifedi, which was not a good situation to be in. And he just doesn't strike me as a guy that you can't replace. For me, this is something that suits all parties.
Yeah, I think it's Warren Clark, who's on ESPN, who used to be the safety for the Steelers. And he said a few years ago that as soon as the Steelers pay Antonio Brown, they're creating a monster. And it kind of feels like the Seahawks may do that if they were to pay Frank Clark. I have absolutely nothing to base that off. But it kind of feels, and it maybe the team kind of see that as well, because everything positive for Frank Clark has been over the last 15 months, over the last 20-odd games where he put up numbers. He did it with broken elbows and broken wrists and strains on every limb and muscle in his arms and legs. But it's only been the last year when he's really done it, when you kind of saw with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett over the Super Bowl years, but not just past that, you saw him kind of build things off the field. Frank Clark maybe not have had the opportunity, but yeah, like I said, there would not be much tea spilt or if the deal is put through for Frank Clark.
Agreed.
Yeah, people must hate this episode of the podcast. Could be green and everything. Elsewhere on Seahawk land, John Schneider spoke at his the charity event, which is run in conjunction with the charity him and his wife run for Ben's Fund mid part of last week, where he said there was no decision yet on whether the team are going to pick up Jermaine Ifedi's fifth year option, which is due, I think, in about 12 or 13 days, which will pay Jermaine Ifedi $8 or $9 million, I'm guessing, going off what other people are paid, or he will be a free agent in 12 months' time. Jamarco Jones is a name which keeps cropping up. I think Dave Bailey's sent in a question in reference to him. His evolution after spending the year on the injured reserve list, and you'd expect building his body up with all the trainers to have Emax with a way to that can be a benefit to the team on the field, could say a lot for what the team do with Ifedi, couldn't it?
It's surprising that they're not picking up this option, because I don't know, like, how much would his option be for the fifth year? I can't imagine you're going to find someone like, he had a decent year last year, and I think continuity with the coach, with that line would be a good thing. And it, I find it a bit surprising that they're not looking to him as at least someone that, like, maybe you could trade next year and get something for, as opposed to just letting go. Like, I think you could probably trade him for slightly better than a compensation pick that you'd end up getting rid of.
I don't think you can. No, I don't. I don't think. If you can't, I know they were asking and seem pretty steadfast what they're asking for Earl Thomas's and all that. But if you can't make a deal for Earl Thomas, and you can only get a fifth round pick and a wide receiver who didn't even make it out of training camp for Michael Bennett, for the production they put in, Jermaine Fetty isn't doing that. It's a position which
he either has a good year next year and you can trade him, or he's a bad year and it's not like that he's on the cap for that much money as a fifth year option. Bear in mind that the number of offensive linemen that seem to be available, you know, is not exactly growing.
Yeah, but that's why I mentioned people like Jamarco Jones. I think he could be. I mean, he was possibly my favorite draft pick of the lot they made last year. And then he got put on the AR with like a broken nail or something. But just because it's quite clear what they were doing, they're looking at his second year. They kind of redshirted him like they did a few others in the past. It just if he makes the step from college, because obviously we haven't seen him that much. I think he played one game in preseason before he got injured. But if he can stay healthy and he can look like the player he was at Ohio State, there's not that much of a drop off. And that $8-9 million you could pay a Fetty could cover other contracts the team are going to have to pay, and also keep, like, roll it on if they whatever they can do for contracts a couple of years down the line, instead of paying Jermaine Fetty, let Jermaine Fetty walk, get another team to overpay for him. Look what Cincinnati did with their airline and free agency. You can easily get a third or fourth round pick for Jermaine Fetty, and a trade is not going to get that for Jermaine Fetty.
Fair enough. I mean, look, it'll be one of those things that will either, you know, as with many things in the world, it either will or won't work out. It struck me as surprising. Like, what if you'd asked me last week, do you think the team will pick up his option? I would have said almost immediately yes, just because that's
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I would be a lot less surprised if they didn't.
Fair enough.
But also at the same time, it's a position, and I guess kind of a person who seems to get in his own, not knowing anything about Jermaine Fetty or how he is, but he just, I mean, we heard from Dwayne Brown and Justin Britt and Pete Carroll and Mike Solari how he kind of, he read too much social media kind of thing. So if he's playing with that chip, I mean, even if they pick up his fifth option, the team could then re-sign him next year, but obviously at that point, it's probably going to be more expensive than the option would be, so maybe that's what they're kind of debating, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is not signed. Also from John Schneider, the main note from Schneider talking to the press last week at his charity event was that Doug Baldwin has had his hernia surgery, but his timetable for recovery and return to practice field is unknown. There's still a looming cloud with the draft just 3-4 days away, Adam.
Well, so as it happens, Pete Carroll and John Schneider are at this moment doing their kind of whatever you'd voluntary workout, OTAs, press conference. And Carroll, Greg Bell, has just tweeted out saying, Pete Carroll says wide receiver Doug Baldwin is in Seahawks HQ rehabbing from 3 off-season surgeries, open bracket, knee, shoulder, and sports hernia, close bracket. And then the quote from Pete Carroll is, it's a long haul.
Oh, oh, that's kind of bummed me out.
really bad.
Yeah, and also Schneider said there's nothing new on Frank Clark trade speculation, which is the answer you'd probably expect. But yeah, that doesn't sound good for 2019 Doug Baldwin, if anything else, Adam.
You just have to wonder if at some point he's going to turn around and say, nah, this ain't worth it.
Yeah, and I think that is, especially when you see, especially with Doug Baldwin, you see what he's doing off the field, the things he's putting into action off the field. It kind of starts to edge that way. And
my prediction for him is that he'll be in business with Colin Kaepernick 3 months after he's retired.
Yeah, he'll be walking around in, was it, I Know My Rights t-shirts and everything, campaigning for that, which will be something we will approach and probably pod about when, if that day and time comes, because Doug Baldwin is, as we mentioned a few times this podcast, one of our favourites.
Might be our best way to get him on the show, to be honest.
It might be, it might be. Back in the day, I think he had a pretty close affinity for this part of the world. Anything else with contract stuff before we get into schedule and questions and the rest of it, Adam?
Anything else with contracts? I think that's probably me. I mean, so for the listeners, who should we be... Who are we not talking about? Maybe we should be. I mean, there's no one really that's kind of in going into year four that's of that degree of importance, yeah, as there, with all due respect to them.
No, because that just shows how bad those couple of draft classes were. Yeah. We've only really got Jermaine Fedde to talk about. Frank Clark, obviously. Jerome Reed will be something next year. Nick Vanette, yeah. But, yeah.
But, I mean, Nick Vanette is not getting a contract in Seattle.
If Luke Wilson doesn't get a contract in Seattle, Nick Vanette will start getting a contract in Seattle.
Yeah, agreed.
Especially with the likes of Chase Sternberger in the draft next weekend. So we'll move on and we'll talk 2019 Seahawks scheduling.
Hi, this is Jessamyn McIntyre, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
Yeah, so also last week with the draft 10 days away, obviously the NFL like to do things by the calendar, and they announce announcements for announcements with things that will happen in 7 months' time. The 2019 NFL regular season schedule was released last week, and the Seahawks schedule threw up some quirks. Adam, I'm going to start off right at the top at week one, before we get into more general look. Imagine waiting for a Spurs season and you get the Cincinnati Bengals equivalent in the Premier League first week of the season. I mean, we wait eight months for a Seahawks game and we get Andy Dalton.
Sounds like a W to me. So
so this is just you kind of want that banner game. I know obviously it's awkward and wins are more important than enjoyment at times, but what are your thoughts on the schedule? It starts off as a home away.
It's okay. I mean, I think from a team perspective, it could be slightly better because there's so many 10 a.m. kickoffs. And from a UK Seahawk fan perspective, it could be better because there's so many primetime kickoffs. So yeah, you kind of, you know, those 1:25 Western time starts are perfect for us because we can watch it during red zone and whatever and not have to distort the entire week of body clock time to watch the bloody thing. But overall, I mean, it's not, I think it's kind of a middling schedule. The late bye is always a good thing to have. So I'm pleased to have that, but you know, it's a schedule after all, and there's not I people that kind of want to write reams and reams of content after it, you know, aside from knowing how many late bedtimes we're going to have, it's not really that big a deal, I don't think.
So yeah, the Seahawks have 1 a.m. start in the first 2.5 months of the season, whilst they have 3 6 p.m. starts in the first 2.5 months of the season. And with a week 11 by November 17, 18, that weekend the Seahawks have off, and then they have one, as Adam said, which isn't kind to UK viewers. They have a 1:20 Sunday night football game in Philadelphia, followed up by Monday night football at home to the Vikings on the first weekend of the 2nd of December, and 6 days later they fly down to LA for another 1 a.m. game in the Coliseum against the Rams. And then they finish with, then they follow that up with another early game across country in Carolina, because it wouldn't be a Seahawks schedule without the Carolina Panthers on it, would it, Adam?
No, that's almost, I kind of would more like to play them than the Cardinals every year these days.
but the schedule, everyone in the UK is scrambling around to make the most of some quite ridiculous airline flight prices, especially from British Airways at the minute. A lot of people are circling the Baltimore Ravens game on the 20th of October, which obviously at this point We'll see the return of Earl Thomas. It's completely pointless at this point, but it takes about 90 seconds of content for a pod. Prediction for that schedule for the 2019 Seahawks, Adam?
I think I had 8-8.
Yeah, I think that's what you text me immediately.
And I just thought that because of the number of early kickoffs, that might make things a little bit trickier than kind of the 9-7, 10-6 that I otherwise would have thought that we'd had. But we're typically so mediocre in those games that I don't know. Yeah. That's kind of what it said to me. But you know, that I could be completely wrong and they could surprise us again. But given, you know, that it's often a kick here or there that can make all the difference, it just 8-8 seemed a fairly, well, the ultimate middling prediction to make, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I do quite like that we've got the Steelers early before they sort the kinks out, and the same with the Saints. But then we've got a lot of question marks. We don't really know what the Rams are going to look like coming off the Super Bowl. The Browns are everyone's fancy pick and probably our fancy pick for the 2019 season. You don't know what Lamar's going to look like. You don't know what the Falcons' offense is going to look like. You don't know what Bruce Arians is going to do with the Jameis and the Buccaneers. Jimmy Garoppolo could be healthy and firing for the 49ers. And that end of season run does not read pretty. But then at that point in the season, most years for the Seahawks is when we get hot. So it's kind of one of them where it's kind of, if it goes on form, there could be some absolute barnstormers. But if it goes as it looks on paper, it could be a bit of a limp to the finish, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's as always, it's going to be dictated by three or four games that end up making all the difference, but hopefully things are going to be a lot clearer after this week to see what they do in the draft. I think looking at the roster now, there are so many gaps because they're just players that have gone and whatever. And it'll just be interesting to see what they do with that first round pick, see who they trade it for, which is what they expect they will do. And then I think we might have a better indication. But, you know, if that offense is without Doug Baldwin, it looks pretty light on the wide receiver front. So that's just another thing that will need to be sorted. I certainly think that if you're 8-8, if you predict 8-8, then that means you could go 10-6, and 10-6 is the playoffs. But there's not a lot of difference between a 6-10 team and a 10-6 team. No. When all said and done, it's a few kicks here, it's a few plays there. And, you know, if you look at how we played last year, there were three or four games that went right to the wire last year that we easily could have lost on another season, but we didn't. So, and when we're delighted to get the record we did off the back of it.
I kind of want to be overconfident with this schedule, but that, as I say, that after bye week run is not... Doesn't read very well. 8-8 kind of seems like a pretty good place to put it. But with the Seahawks, if everything goes to plan, if they have a good draft and the right people and the right depth stays deep in depth and healthy and everything, the team could be a bit of a problem this season. Moving on, we will get to some of your questions you posted back in the last week when we were originally pod. So send in some of your questions. Mark Woodcock wants to know, the only problem is with QB1 signing, can we afford to pay Frank and next year Bobby and Jaron up? I can't see all three being signed unless Doug retires. Since DeMarcus Lawrence got $105 million, can we afford to keep Frank? I think we touched on that. We probably can't. Bobby and Jaron up next year, Adam. That's kind of the way the priority order for those two, isn't it? And probably a pretty big gap between two of them as well.
I don't know what Bobby Wagner would be thinking as a person. I would hope that he would kind of take the KJ Wright route and play this year and not hold out, although he'd be well within his right to hold out, I think, given his ability and his kind of, he's at a better stage than KJ Wright was in terms of ability and health going into his last season. But it wouldn't stun me if they tried to nurse Bobby through this year from a financial point of view and then pay him at the end of the season and then do the same with Jaron Reed, because I imagine that someone like Reed would get effectively the money that Doug Baldwin's on this year, give or take. It wouldn't, you know, you could almost transfer that money, that cap hit, over from one to the other, and then Bobby would need some kind of extension and an upping if you were going to pay him. He's another one that if you got offered a high second round pick for this year, I'd be half tempted to do it, just because if you look at the
the statistics of linebackers over the age of 30. But that's a purely emotionless and anti-fan kind of decision. It's just looking at the numbers, which obviously sports is much more than that. But I think they can certainly afford to keep Bobby and Jaron. But again, it's predicated a lot on Frank Clark not being there.
Yeah. Yeah, everything with those two is on what they do with Frank Clark, and it seems what they do with Frank Clark this week. I wouldn't trade Bobby Wagner. He's someone I would, in the nicest possible way, run into the ground. Because there's the drop-off from him to an unknown or anyone else in the league is pretty substantial for this defense, and the defense which has questions and isn't as solid other positions as it was in the past few years. I just don't see any feasible way where you can trade Bobby Wagner. Just maybe not pay him what he wants, but you're going to have to stump up cash. And I think everything with Russell Wilson, the fact you probably have to pay Bobby Wagner and keep other people in the next couple of years, the likelihood of Jaron Reed being here for the long term kind of took a hit over the last couple of weeks, I think. And it could be interesting to see what the team do at that position this draft, because as we said earlier, it is one which does have some pretty interesting names and some pretty deep talent at a position in this draft. And if you're going to do that and look ahead, if they do approach that position in this draft, then that doesn't bode well for Jaron Reed's future in Seattle. But yeah, all of that is kind of talking with the inclination and thought that Frank Clark won't be in Seattle next year, Adam. That's pretty much it. Dave Bailey asked after injury last preseason, do you see Jamarco Jones starting A-line 2019? As I said, yes, I do. Not maybe starting week one, but he's a prop. If he gets over his injury, wherever it was, can't remember at this point, he's a proper player. The fact we got him at fourth or fifth round last year is quite frankly ridiculous. Also, with them, we ask questions. We got plenty of get in the bin nominees. So let's shimmy onto that one, shall we, Adam?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
And Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
So before we get on to mine and Adam's get in the bin this week, we're going to run through the guys and things you people, you fabulous listeners, put forward this week. Will Travers from Deepest Japan says, NFL scheduling can get in the bin with all the 5 a.m. finishes UK fans will have to put up with. And as we said, 4 in 5 weeks is unkind. Thoughts on the scheduling getting in the bin, Adam?
I think that the more things in the bin, the better. So I'm absolutely happy with putting the scheduling computer right in it.
Yeah, Mark Wilcott says, anyone who thinks we shouldn't have signed Russ can get in the bin, as in the end he took less than I thought it would take and signed for 4 years, not three. And a no trade clause inserted, it will look cheap as soon as next year. That kind of hits everything we said, doesn't it? It's going to look cheaper than we thought. And it's going to be quite quickly when we see that.
Yeah, the only caveat I'd say is that there are some people out there that, you know, would have said sign Wilson if he demands $50 million a year. And I think those people were probably slightly overdoing it. As it happens, as we've discussed, that it all worked out very well for both player and team. So I'm delighted. But I do think anyone that had trepidation over signing a guy just like or handing a guy a blank check, I think that was a fair concern to have. Thankfully, it's not one that we need to worry about.
Mike Lopri says, get in the bin, yet again on this tangent, get in the bin to everyone who thinks Russ doesn't deserve to get paid or thinks he's overpaid. I mean, we talked with Alistair, the kind of the no man's land that is QB purgatory and what it would be like without Russell Wilson. And if you think he's overpaid, then you probably not talking from a Seahawks fan perspective, are you? Just kind of shouting from the rooftop just to be heard, because just to be heard in the crowd, aren't you?
Yeah, I thoroughly, thoroughly agree.
Okay. Adam, you're getting the bin this week.
Slightly off NFL topic, and when I say slightly, it's a different sport entirely, because which is very much off topic, so scrap the slightly from the record, but Russell Westbrook is just such a dick.
Like, I don't know how else.
It's just, he always seems like this, and I guess it's vaguely Seattle related because he was, you know, on the Sonics,
drafted by the Sonics,
that moved to Oklahoma, and he's just such a dick. I'm sure he's a great player. I don't really watch an awful lot of basketball, but the things you see on social media, you know, the more stuff you see about basketball, because their content is particularly good, but you kind of get an insight into these players and some of the stuff they do, interacting or, you know, retaliating to fans. And yeah, there's obviously, he's received some abuse, which is completely out of order, but the way in which he carries himself in the press is just pathetic, and he just comes across like a petulant little child. And yeah, I would like to see him thoroughly shoved in the bin, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely helps that the fact that he's going to probably be knocked out of the playoffs, and he also plays for Oklahoma, is just perfect. Someone put on Twitter last night about Westbrook. Westbrook laughed at Stephen and blew a 3-1 lead. He dressed up as KD before a game and got his ass beat. He had, "I'm going to bust his ass all night," at Lillard, and scored one paltry point the rest of the night. You hate to quite regularly see it. And he's kind of someone who, he's one of those players who you quite clearly do detest if he doesn't play for your team, but quite enjoy all his antics, wouldn't you? If he was on your, if you were an Oklahoma City fan, you would enjoy that little bit, wouldn't you?
I guess you kind of, everyone enjoys their own dickhead, but he really, yeah, just does not float my boat at all, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I don't think I've got one for getting the bin this week. I kind of think we touched on the annoying part of Russell Wilson's thing. That kind of probably would be the closest thing. I do want to kind of praise someone, I guess, and that is Stephen A. Smith went on, he had Dwayne Haskins on, for sake, whatever his show is called at this point in 2019. And straight off the bat, someone who takes a lot of grief, some of it very well deserved, and some of it surrounded Dwayne Haskins, and he apologised for pinning him wrong or something. He straight up sat there on live TV and apologised wholeheartedly to a player he had kind of rubbished and kind of dismissed a little bit, which is pretty interesting, pretty cool to see from someone who didn't really need to do that, did he? But Stephen A. Smith gets a lot of flack for a lot of things, but that was pretty cool to see, Adam.
Yeah, I think he's a bit of a hot take merchant, obviously, but it amazes me how many sports these guys have to cover. You know, you've got like Phil Nance, who's doing, I think he did some of the Final Four for basketball, obviously the NFL, and does the Masters. Mike Tirico is the same. You've got Joe Buck, who goes from doing you know, NFL one night, baseball the next night. Mike Francesco, who's obviously a complete and utter moron. Whoa. You know, I'm not respecting him at all, but, you know, it has to talk about golf and NFL and whatever, whereas you think about, like, the morons we've got here, like Adrian Durham, who just has to be a moron about football in general. I understand why these guys have some gaps in the knowledge, but all you ask of a pundit is when they get something wrong, just accept it and move on. And so I think Stephen A. Smith's always been quite good at that, despite the fact that he insists that everyone calls him Stephen A. and no one's ever said, "Just call me Stephen." But that's a damaged bit for another time.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree. He does cover a hell of a lot. I think you saw Jim Nantz go from calling Tiger Woods his ridiculous weekend at Augusta then to being there at the Final Four, and he's just everywhere, Jim Nantz. He went from the Super Bowl to Augusta within 3 weeks. That's quite a career and quite a life that man is living. But yeah, so they do ask quite a lot of the top guys in the industry, but that's why you kind of enjoy seeing people like Katie Nolan and Mina Kimes and that kind of crop get to work, because they are also equally as insightful and, for the most part, when comparing to other people on other networks, more entertaining, Adam.
Yes, couldn't agree more. They obviously put in a hell of a shift. I mean, you know, Kevin Harlan's on the radio talking to Softy every week and always going from NFL to basketball, then it must be a very hard zone to get yourself in. So it doesn't stun me that these guys occasionally make a mistake with the player or whatever they're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's everything this week. Obviously, the NFL draft is at the back end of this week, back in Nashville, as I keep saying. Just haven't really done much insight on the, or got down too deep on the NFL draft this year, apart from our conversations last week with Alistair, which is, I hope, it's enjoyable for everyone who listens, as it was for myself and Adam talking about it. Because if you haven't had a chance yet after the podcast to go and check the work he's done, it is ridiculously detailed, and for what appears, as Adam said, doesn't do it for free as well to a certain extent. So I think a few names that you want to keep an eye out for, any positions or players caught your eye who you'd quite like the Seahawks to take a run at this weekend if the opportunity presents?
I've got to say, in all honesty, and just because I don't want to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, I have never felt as uninformed about a draft as I have done this year. It's just all completely missed me by. I generally try and ignore a lot of the fluff in the media about X player and Y player, and I leave it to the experts. So I'll defer to you, Stu, and who do you fancy if push comes to shove?
I mean... Push them to shove, I'd quite like Andre Dillard. In fact, I'd quite like quite a lot of Washington State players on our team next year. I'd like Andre Dillard if he was there. That would definitely make the decision up for Jermaine and Fetty. I'd quite like James Williams as that might age running back. And then if you're going to take a run at a backup quarterback, if you're going to have a backup quarterback behind Russell Wilson, you might as well have some fun and get some fun sound bites from someone like Gardner Minshew, wouldn't you?
That would be great fun.
But outside of that, I think the player that Alistair keyed in is someone he thinks will be the Seahawks' first pick, Ben Benogu or Banagu from TCU, someone I've watched and quite liked for a couple of years at TCU. He would be quite nice and, again, would make a decision for Frank Clark. Antoine Wesley from, I think it's NC State, I probably should have looked into that, wide receiver. He just has, he's like a poor man's Mike Evans. He has ridiculously strong hands, but he doesn't seem to do anything like exceptionally well. He's probably going to be a day three pick, but he just looks quite good. And his route running, especially down in the end zone, the red zone, is just ridiculous. Some of this, how he gets separation on like the 4 yard line for a back corner catch, is really cool. So he'd be someone I quite like. And then outside of that, I haven't really look, because I think the Seahawks having only 4 picks has kind of pulled me away. But if anyone has the Athletic, Michael Sean Dugar, a friend, give another shout out. He, with the help of Dane Brugler and a few other, Jim Nagy, who ran the Super Bowl, used to work with Senior Bowl, and used to work for the Seahawks amongst other teams. That mock draft kind of hits everything. You got JJ Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford. You got Jordan Miller, obviously, from the Huskies. And someone like Greg Gaines would be quite fun to see stay in Seattle as well, wouldn't it? Just keep get a Washington player. We seem to have one every year. We kind of pin our hopes. Obviously, myself was Kevin King a couple of years ago and got heartbroken by Malik McDowell. But it would be quite cool to finally see a Husky come on down from Montlake to Renton, wouldn't it?
That would be... yeah, I've always been a big fan of... Gaines, who I've always described as Mongo from Blazing Saddles, the way he reminds me of. That's my player comp.
What a pull that is. So wherever you watch the draft, obviously we will be doing draft recaps and stuff. Maybe me and Adam might get a few other people on.
Let's see if we can get together on Sunday night. Let's try and get together Sunday night just to chop up who the Seahawks have taken and any notable standouts.
Yeah, and obviously one other note from UK Seahawks land is a bit of sad news which broke at the back end of last week. As you probably saw on our podcast feed and on our Twitter and on our Facebook, we republished an interview myself and Sean, the UK Seahawks president, did 3 years ago, well, 2.5 years ago, back in September 2016 in Birmingham with Pam Shepherd, talking 80s UK Seahawkers and Kenny Easley and what it was like for her that day, seeing everyone convene in Birmingham compared to the humble beginnings of the UK Seahawkers. Pam, with her late husband, set up the first incarnation of the UK Seahawkers and sadly died at the towards the back end of last week in the southwest of England, surrounded by all Earth family. We just like to pass on, as we have to Gavin directly via the committee and myself personally as well, our condolences to Gavin and all of the Shepherd family, because Pam was full of stories and a properly, properly genuine and nice lady to come across and meet. And there's some weird and wonderful stories from Adam.
Absolutely. I think people like us, we just carry the torch of this group. And it's very important to remember what people like Pam started out, back 30 years ago when something of this stature couldn't even be imagined. So people like Pam, who are absolute pillars of our community as UK Seahawkers fans, will be greatly missed, and we send our love and our thoughts and condolences to her and all of her family.
Yeah, if anyone out listening there wants to send anything on donations or flowers or anything, or maybe wants themselves to attend the service for Pam, just contact Gavin on Twitter or Facebook, and also you could probably reach out to Cedric, who's the secretary for the UK Seahawkers, who has kind of been the go-between between Gavin and the UK Seahawkers committee with all this. If you want to do, I think it's encouraged to send donations to certain charities and send in things to be present on the day. So yeah, we send all our condolences and best wishes to the Shepherd family and hope everything goes as well as things like that can go with that. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can through all the usual means and methods, Twitter at Seahawkers UK, Facebook, The Pedestrian Podcast, and UK Seattle Seahawks fans, thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. The podcast is still up on iTunes, I believe, and is now up on Spotify. Just search The Pedestrian Podcast on all of those and leave, rate, and review, and all the rest of it to bump us back up and give us a slight rush of endorphins or whatever may come with a positive comment on this podcast. Until next time, enjoy the draft from whatever corner of the world you watch it from the few Seahawkers making the trek and voyage to Nashville itself for draft weekend. Enjoy, and until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
And now, God, I can't believe, and Gavin sort of said, and you said again today, I found a question. Me, Chet, my dad, and Gavin. What?
And these sort of get-togethers are happening all over the country.
I just find that, I don't think I, with my vocabulary, I've got the words to put into the absolute amazement that this has given me today. And the pleasure and the fun I've had meeting such bloody not, sorry, my left speak. Such very nice. Such very nice people. And you know, I just all day, I mean, I've been on the verge of tears most times. Because I keep thinking of Shep and thinking, what would he have made of this? He would have said to me, what? How did this happen?